Do 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 do.
WYPR listeners might recognize this voice. It belongs to the guy who brings us the news here on the radio station every morning.
My name is Nathan Sterner, and I am a huge fan of the BBC television program Doctor Who, as I have been since I was 5 or 6 years old.
I'm going to be honest. Nathan and I, we've got plenty of nerdy things in common. We both wear corduroys. We both like dumb jokes. We both work in public radio. But when it comes to Doctor Who, I simply have no interest. I never have. Don't think I ever will. I just don't get it. But I decided, with this convention coming up, I finally wanted to try to understand. So, you're going to hear from a lot of Doctor Who fans over the next 20 minutes. Young, old, male, female, new fans, original fans. A small galaxy of fans, if you will. But as I prepared to embark on this mission of understanding, being a total novice, I knew I needed some basic training. So, I sat down for some Doctor Who boot camp with Nathan.
You've still never watched an episode.
No.
You asked me a week ago to come in here, and you're still keeping yourself pure?
It is my promise to myself not to watch Doctor Who until I have talked to everyone about Doctor Who.
Until the superfans pollute your brain.
That's right. I am coming at this from the position of a complete outsider.
I can't even imagine how you could not know everything about Doctor Who. That's the thing about being a fan since you're 5 or 6 years old. I knew Doctor Who before I knew Long Division.
All I know about Doctor Who is that when I was young, I would like walk into the den and my dad would be watching the really old episodes.
Which doctor?
I don't know.
Do you remember what he looked like?
All I remember was like the special effects were so bad. I would just think to myself, like, why are you watching this? What could possibly be entertaining about
this?
Well,
you would have been walking into the late 70s or early 80s. I mean, yeah. What were special effects like back in that day anyway? It's not as if television was offering the most brilliant of special effects.
All this is to say, I missed my opportunity, I guess, to get hooked at a young age and have never been...
You missed your opportunity to get hooked at a young age. You still have an opportunity
to
be hooked.
Look, I'm coming at this with an open mind, a curious mind.
Okay.
And it is with that open mind, sir, I ask you to explain to me who is Doctor Who and what is the premise of this TV odyssey?
Basically, the Doctor is a guy who goes around and does stuff traveling through space and time.
He's a person.
He is a person. A little bit more elaboration now. The Doctor is a Time Lord from the planet Gallifrey in the constellation Cerberus. In the first episode is shortly after he nicked a TARDIS. A TARDIS is a time machine, stands for time and relative dimension in space. Nicked a TARDIS from his people with his granddaughter and decided to go off and explore stuff and see things. Picked up the daughter's teachers from Earth because he had decided to land on Earth for a little while just to see what was going on. She went to school. They followed her home to the junkyard because the TARDIS, his time and space machine, is broken.
This is the telephone booth thing.
Yeah, so part of this, I think, was just to make it easier for sets and such, because you could easily find a telephone booth in the 1960s England. It was an easy prop to get.
Right.
But the backstory to that is the TARDIS is supposed to be able to look like anything. The moment that the TARDIS materializes, it goes through 8-12 dimensions and figures out the best possible thing that it could disguise itself as in the given place that it is, and then disguises itself as a police box from the 1960s. Because the thing's broken. He fixed it once when he was in his sixth incarnation, my favorite, Colin Baker.
So he's from the future, presumably, and he's traveling back in time?
He's from a... Hard to say, because Gallifrey is not in the same time zone as us. Gallifrey's,
presumably, it's another planet.
Gallifrey's far older, and then it goes to the future. It's all wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Uh-huh.
Exactly where it is. And Gallifrey was destroyed... But then it wasn't destroyed, and now is kind of hidden in the pocket universe where it will eventually be discovered, hopefully, at some point in the future.
All right, let me stop you here. Now, tell me if I understand this correctly. Doctor Who is actually, he's an alien from another planet far away.
Yes,
which may exist in the future. Oh, he has two hearts.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks like your average, like, British actor.
Yes, yes.
He exists on this planet far away, but on this planet, time machines are just lying around. Evidently to the point where you can just, like, hop into one and steal it.
Well, at this point, at the point that he started, the Time Lords basically were the guardians of the Continuum. And they had time machines, but mostly all they did was watch. And most of them had no interest whatsoever in going out and doing things. It was only a few nutters, like the Doctor, who decided to go out.
And you say he took his daughter with him?
Granddaughter.
Granddaughter. Okay. So does each episode have sort of a formula to it that fans kind of can latch onto? Like the beginning of the episode, he arrives somewhere, they have to figure out where they are, and then they meet a new enemy every episode? Or what happens?
I would say that's the best rough formula. But the thing is, over 50 years of this,
yeah,
there is less and less formula. Yes, frequently it will start off with them in the TARDIS.
50 years this show has been on the air?
The first broadcast of the show was delayed because of coverage of the Kennedy assassination.
Unreal.
That is true.
A 50-year broadcast history. I don't know much about this show, but I know there's a bunch of different Doctor Whos.
Yes.
No one's bothered by that? None of the fans are like...
No, the fans love it. Uh-huh. Okay, so another franchise that has existed over a long period of time is the James Bond thing.
Yeah, right.
There are a whole bunch of different James Bond, but they're all the same James Bond, right? I mean, you don't...
You just assume it's James Bond.
You just assume it's James Bond.
Right. And the same thing with Doctor Who.
No, because it is part of the continuity. It's part of the whole thing. The first Doctor, the Doctor who nicked the TARDIS in the first place and came to Earth, got old and injured and died. But because he's a Time Lord, they have the ability to regenerate. Oh. They change their bodies. They have a somewhat different personality. They have different likes, different dislikes, different tastes in clothing. They become a new version of the Doctor. And all of the Time Lords do this or can do this. And so the first Doctor, William Hartnell, became the second Doctor. Patrick Troughton came the third Doctor, Jon Pertwee. And it just keeps on going. But it's all connected.
It's
and remember,
written into the script.
It's written
then,
into the script.
Death
it
of one
part
Doctor
of it.
And the birth.
The death of one Doctor or the rebirth. Into the new one.
How utterly convenient.
Most of the time, he changes form on screen. You watch him become from one Doctor to the next.
So those qualify as a very special episode of Doctor Who.
Yep, it's the regeneration episodes. Uh-huh. Yep.
Talk to me about what the fascination is here. What is the fascination on a broader level for a Doctor Who fan?
I'm sure every Doctor Who fan has their own specific reasons for fascination. I mean, I think part of the fascination is the science-y aspect to it. I mean, there's always the some degree triumph of science that comes through. However, there are so many things that could happen. You could go anywhere, future, back, see alien civilizations, see the destruction of Earth when the sun expands. All that happens on Doctor Who. And I guess the fascination with the Doctor himself, you never really know exactly who he is. There's so much conflicting continuity both on the show and in the surrounded broader universe of Doctor Who. The idea that I don't know, that you can change and become a new version of yourself, a better version of yourself. Who wouldn't want to be a better version of yourself? I mean, what if I, Nathan Sterner, could regenerate into Nathan Sterner 2.0. Be even better, right? Right? That's part of the fascination with regeneration.
Reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a religion.
I guess Doctor Who is a religion. Doctor Who, I'm sure that there have been theses on that.
Listeners, those among you who are Doctor Who fans are already, I'm sure, parsing and debating Nathan's analysis. And those among you who are not Doctor Who fans, well, you now know officially as much about the show as I do. So come with me, companions, on a trip back in time to the early days of Doctor Who. We're about to hear from some wizened old Doctor Who fans, Frank Barish and Howard Yang. Frank's credentials, he has a tattoo of a Dalek. That's a Doctor Who bad guy robot that goes around yelling, "Exterminate." And Howard, for his part, claims to have seen every existing episode of Doctor Who.
In the classic years, it was like a serial. It was a half-hour show. And an episode would be 6 weeks long. So you'd have like one episode split up over 6 weeks. It was like a cliffhanger type of thing.
It was cheap. It was really corny. It were just bad effects. So those episodes, yeah, you just suspended reality. You escaped to the world, even though you knew it was kind of like corny looking.
And they'd show them on PBS in the United States, but they'd take all the episodes and put them together and show one complete episode like that, like a movie almost.
You could forgive bad effects and very stiff moving monsters. Clearly guys in rubber suits or stiff like costumes because of the performances and how they just sold it really well.
They sold it apparently really well from 1963 to about 1989. That's when the show went off the air for an extended period of time, a period that fans refer to somberly as the Dark Years. But like the intrepid Time Lord himself, the show was destined to regenerate. In 2005, Doctor Who rose again, and the show has enjoyed an immense, unprecedented popularity ever since. At the heart of the fascination, it appears, is this fantastical notion of time travel.
Time travel technology and the way that it operates in Doctor Who is primarily based upon the requirements of the plot.
The show itself, from one week to the next, can be a completely different kind of show. They can tell any kind of story.
And it has. I mean, it's not just sci-fi. They've done Western episodes and horror. And
if you want to have an episode where he's in a castle full of vampires or werewolves, that's fine. If you want to have something where there's an alien invasion of London in the year, you know, 2500, that's fine.
And I think the flexibility of that premise is just so enticing. It's so exciting to think that you could be watching something that's all of a piece and yet can constantly adapt to different kinds of storytelling.
You can come at people from a new direction, so they don't quite see the serious bit coming until it's on top of them, and then they're sort of looking at themselves and thinking, what would I do in this situation? And it's easy to say that if you're looking at aliens versus looking at human beings.
The show is one that encourages you that you can kind of, you know, be greater than your environment. You can see the universe and you can be what you want to be. So there's a real sense of opening of potential in the program.
The ideas, the concepts of the aliens and these different worlds that the show creates are really interesting. Like, there's an episode where they go to a planet that the whole planet is just a library and everyone is missing from the planet. Almost every episode has something like that, where you are given a really interesting world and then makes you think about things in ways that normally you wouldn't.
Really, when it comes down to it, it's such a very simple idea. There's a guy in a spaceship that looks like a box. He can go anywhere in space and time. Let's go tell a story. Let's go have an adventure. Within that incredibly simple framework, you can tell any story.
From WYPR in Baltimore, this is The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin. If you're just tuning in, we're trying to wrap our minds around a cultural phenomenon that is 51 years old and counting, Doctor Who. I should let you know who we just heard from there. That was Arnold T. Blumberg of the Who's Talking podcast, Shia Ergang-Layden, he's a fan of the past 4 years, David Ward, a longtime fan whose front door, by the way, is painted like the TARDIS time machine, Christine Stewart, a fan for 34 years and the owner of a Doctor Who alarm clock, recent fan Patrick Stork, and Dale Arnold, head of the Baltimore Science Fiction Society. A robust council of companions to have on this journey with us, and we're going to hear more from them now as we try to understand what's really at the heart, or maybe I should say the hearts, of this enigmatic rogue Time Lord, Doctor Who.
He's not human, but he has two hearts. He's a Time Lord from planet Gallifrey.
He regenerates after he is, like, wounded badly or is dying. Then he pops back up with a new face and a different personality, but all of his memories are the same, and he's still kind of the same guy.
Within every single regeneration of the Doctor and every actor, there is that core feeling of neediness and loneliness and curiosity and wanting to explore. He didn't want to stay on his planet. That's why he stole the TARDIS and left.
The Doctor isn't a typical one-dimensional protagonist. We see glimpses of his dark side. We see his compassionate side. We know that he has, we assume, good intentions, but there's times where I think most Whovians scratch their heads and say, well, why did that happen? Or why did he do that?
I don't know. It's like Hannibal Lecter. You don't want to relate to Hannibal Lecter when you're watching Silence of the Lambs, but he is such a fascinating character. It's hard not to want to try to understand him or figure out all these little things that he's saying. And the Doctor is a lot like that, where he's so different, but he's so interesting. You want to see what he does and what he says.
Except that he's not a cannibalistic murderer. I think a lot
yeah,
of your fellow
cannibalistic murderer.
You're a lot of your fellow Whovians are probably going to be taking some umbrage at this comparison that you're making.
Well, he's not wholly a good guy either. I mean, part of what makes him a really interesting character is he struggles with trying to figure out if he's a good guy or not.
The Doctor makes sacrifices that at first glance, when we see it happen, we think he's being selfish, but later we realize that he was doing it for the good of his companion or to save a planet or a galaxy or what have you.
He has his own set of personal rules. You know, if he comes across a race in need, he wouldn't turn away, but he doesn't seek it out. He's pulled towards those who need help.
It's much more about questioning, is he making the right choice? And since he's sort of out there alone, making these decisions unilaterally, it's interesting to also see that this is a character that questions himself.
Of course he's a hero, but I don't know that I would call him the real hero of the show. I would almost argue that the companions are, because, I mean, the Doctor, of course, zooms around in this little blue box. It's actually a time machine, and he saves the day. But none of that would be possible if he wasn't with his companions. So all of them, while they're just as ordinary as anybody else, they're not afraid to call the Doctor out when he makes a bad decision or if they don't agree with his opinions on something. And I think also the Doctor's willingness to listen and change his mind about these things, that also kind of makes him a hero as well.
That's Kimber Wiegand, Arnold T. Blumberg, Maura Horowitz, Shia Ergang-Layden, Red Flag, he's the one who compared Doctor Who to Hannibal Lecter. We also heard there from Mike Stork, Christine Stewart, 11-year-old Noah Benham, and 14-year-old Grant Hewitt. And a reminder again, full disclosure, I know nothing about this TV show, Doctor Who. Never seen an episode as of this radio broadcast. But I gotta say, I'm getting pretty intrigued. And I think what's interesting is when you start to think about what Doctor Who evidently is not when you compare it to other sci-fi shows out there. Evidently, the guy never shoots a gun. His only tool is something called a sonic screwdriver. I gather he uses that to hack computers and stuff. But maybe most importantly, this guy doesn't seem to have any discernible mission. I mean, think about that in comparison to Star Trek.
With Star Trek, for example, we have the non-interference directive, where for moral reasons, the Federation doesn't want to interfere with people, with lesser civilizations.
They're patrolling that galaxy. They're at once both explorers, but also part of a military structure, and they're part of that establishment that they serve. The Doctor is completely outside of that.
I think what makes Doctor Who stand out from the crowd nowadays is it just seems to have a lot more kind of heart. I think it really does wear its heart on its sleeve, which is relatively unusual for science fiction. It's telling sci-fi stories, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in a sci-fi mode. It can be a lot more human.
So much sci-fi sets very specific rules. Like Red Dwarf never had aliens. It was always mutated versions of people that were further out into space than the ship. Star Trek never got really supernatural. It was always alien-based. A lot of these shows rely on telling an overarching story that has a specific end at some point. You've got, you know, trying to reach Earth and Galactica. X-Files was about finding Mulder's sister, in theory. But you have these things that are like the long game MacGuffin. And even if those are achieved and move past, Doctor Who is just, let's explore.
And maybe it's that simple and all-encompassing mission, let's explore, that accounts for the longevity of a program that started out as a BBC kids show in 1963 and now, in 2015, has an international fan base of all ages and all stripes, from the classic Whovians, fans since the old days, to the new Whovians, who've hopped on the TARDIS since its 2005 reboot.
Doctor Who has become a mainstream cult phenomenon. It gets covers of Entertainment Weekly and TV Guide. Many fans here in this country would never have imagined that day would come.
There was the classic series fandom where, like, you literally became friends with people because you'd actually find somebody had a videotape of an episode you've never seen before. You know, this is pre-internet days.
It's not so nerdy as it used to be. I think it was pretty nerdy, but this new incarnation, I think, is so popular now that it's being embraced by just a broader group of people. It's not as, like, fringy as it used to be. It's not people who stay up late on Saturday nights watching PBS. It's downloaded and watched on, you know, Netflix and things like that.
It sounds like you might resent this recent surge of popularity of Doctor Who.
I wish it would have been as popular then as it is now. Maybe you would have had more friends that way, being a total nerd.
You know, the show at its heart is just pure innocence, and I think, you know, a lot of that gets lost as you grow up. So to find a community of other people who are drawn to the same thing, it makes it very easy to become friends with them.
Yeah, I like what I'm hearing from people about the idea that This protagonist, who's been around for so long and seen so much of the universe and been through so much, maintains this innocence and sort of light in his eyes about life. Maybe a reminder to those of us who only have like 100 years of time and only on one planet that perhaps we shouldn't be too quick to become jaded.
Exactly. And he's seen so much and yet manages to always see the good in situations and people, even if no one else can.
Doctor Who fans Kimber Wiegand, Howard Yang, Frank Barish, and Arnold T. Blumberg. Thanks to them and the other Whovians we've heard from, Christine Stewart, Dale Arnold, David Ward, Grant Hewitt, brothers Mike and Patrick Stork, Mara Horowitz, Noah Benham, Shia Ergang-Layden, and Nathan Sterner. And you know, I learned from these folks that what they seem to admire most about the Doctor is that he listens to his companions, he takes what they have to say to heart, and he's willing to change his mind. I've been stubborn about this TV show. It's always seemed ridiculous to me, and honestly, I have never had the desire to watch it. But now, I've got the dubious distinction of being that guy who knows more than anyone should know about Doctor Who, but has still never seen an episode. I think I have no choice at this point but to take the plunge, and I think I'll do it next time I see my dad, who I've always teased mercilessly for being a fan. He and I need something to talk about other than fishing, anyway. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.